Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 68 of Push to Plat. How are you today? Look, it's a wonderful time to be gaming, whether it be on the Xbox, whether it be on the PlayStation. Obviously, some massive titles in the last week with the Ghost of Tsunami dropping. We'll go with that. Dropping, of course, a big week for Microsoft too with the showcase. But look, today I'm very lucky to be joined by a gamer that has a foot in both camps, I believe. We'll find out more about that today. It is the wonderful Aries Flower Girl, or X1001X Puppies on the Xbox. Now, this I've been reading a lot about her in the last day or two, and I can assure you we are nothing alike, listeners, nothing alike at all as gamers, which will make this conversation even more interesting, I think, as we go along. She's not a spam hunter, although it seems like in recent times she has turned her hand to that more and more. She's a competitor. She's a completionist. Look, she's even left-handed. So what more could you want in a gamer, I think? It's my pleasure to introduce Aries today. How are you?
Hey, hello. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. So why don't we just start at the beginning, if we could? Would you like to share with our listeners just a little bit of your gaming history?
Yeah, sure. So back in about 1996, my mom brought down her original Nintendo for me and my twin brother to play, and pretty much that's how it started, with just Zelda and Mario, and we kind of grew up on Nintendo with all their systems all the way until about 2003. I went over to my best friend's house, and she had Halo, so I was playing Halo online with her Xbox Kinect, and that's pretty much how my Xbox career started. I just had to have one. I kept begging my parents to go over to her house, and eventually they bought me one. So, so that's when I kind of got Halo 2 and played it for over 2.5 years. I was pretty good at it. But once the Xbox 360 came out, I went ahead and got one of those. And there was a game on it that came with it called Hexic. And I kind of fell in love with the game. I was just kind of playing it every day until I got all the achievements. And that's kind of where my achievement addiction started. Like my first two completions were Gears of War and Hexic, two very tough games. So pretty much ever since then, just if I play a game, I try to get all the achievements in them. And of course now, both having Xbox and PlayStation, I try to get all the games in the PlayStation games I play.
Yeah, I definitely get that from reading about you. You don't do anything by half measures. You're definitely all in. Now, one of the things I noticed as well when I was doing some research is you write this wonderful blog as well. And you sort of, I mean, you've been around gaming, you know, and achievements and trophies for some time. I mean, your blog starts in 2014 there. And it's a lovely documentation of what you were thinking. In fact, there's a wonderful quote when you started back again, I think in 2019, and it was something to the effect of you had to go back and read and sort of cringe at your 22-year-old self, which I think is lovely.
Yeah.
But what I got from reading that blog, in all seriousness, is that you're very focused. You're a very serious hunter. And I mean, you started off very heavily in multiplayer games, didn't you, as you sort of alluded to. I wonder if I could ask you about this. You put in the blog there that you used to play at one point there. Now, I ask you this only because a lot of our listeners can understand. So you're definitely not in the minority here. But you played Call of Duty for 12 hours a day at one point. And it sort of seems like you almost became overwhelming for you. Do you remember that time? And
yeah. So back when the game came out, like, I played the beta and loved it. So of course I got it day one, and I kind of played it a lot and got really good at it. Like, my KD was about a 4.9 by the end of it. So once I saw myself gaining on the kill leaderboard, because I played nothing but domination, I would just go around and kill, you know, the person that everyone hates that doesn't play objective. But once I saw I was getting really high on that leaderboard, I kind of just like started upping my playtime to try to get to, like, say, 25th. And yeah, it was pretty bad. Like, I was ignoring my family and getting really mad when they asked me to do something. And of course, I wasn't working then, so I didn't have a job. But I would come home from high school and just play Call of Duty till like midnight and then rinse and repeat. And it got pretty frustrating, as you can probably imagine, trying to like catch back up after getting home from school.
Yeah.
And then like, so eventually I got to 25th and like I took a really crappy screenshot with my phone. And after that, I just kind of, my multiplayer kind of died down. I definitely didn't want to play anything as hardcore as that one. So yeah, I kept playing Call of Duty until about Black Ops 2, I think. But the older I got, the more annoying it was trying to play competitively. So I just kind of stopped one day.
Yeah, no, I can understand. It's an interesting thing because, like, I've spoken to Hakum, I've spoken to many of the Mr. Unknown, I've spoken to many of the top-level trophy hunters before, and some on the Xbox side as well, and a lot of them were gamers, you know, sort of, I suppose, achievement gamers and trophy gamers before achievements and trophies even existed, in that they played games through to completion regardless of getting this digital bling or whatever else, and it sounds very much the same for you and your multiplayer games. So what changed in your mind from you know, putting lots of hours into a multiplayer game where I suppose ultimately you're playing for fun, but you know, to improve your ranking and things. What made the mental shift for you from going from that to then playing lots of games for trophies and achievements? So sort of expanding your gaming, I suppose.
Yeah, it was definitely the fun factor. Like at a certain point, like it was just really frustrating trying to play multiplayer and not be as good as I was at four. And that's kind of when I started shifting away from them. Like, I would still get the yearly Call of Duty, but I certainly wouldn't put 12 hours a day into it. Eventually, I just found it more fun to pick up games like, say, I don't know, like Bioshock or Dragon Age and play them all the way through. And, you know, the achievements were kind of like a way to say, okay, if I do all of these achievements, I've kind of beaten the game completely. So that's kind of how I shifted away from multiplayer.
Now, it hasn't all been, you know, all been wonderful, I imagine. I mean, there are a lot of crazy games that, you know, go into gamerscore and trophies to build the level. Of course, one of the games that I read that you enjoyed immensely was, of course, FIFA 06, which I wasn't familiar with this game, but apparently an easy completion on the Xbox that isn't an easy completion. Is that correct?
No, it definitely kicked my ass. I'm not very much of a sports person, so I obviously didn't really know how to play soccer, and I just read that it was a quick completion because I was in a tournament for achievements at the time, and man, it was just whooping my ass. I almost like got rid of it. I had like packed it up to sell it, and then I was like, okay, you know what, I cannot leave this easy game on my profile with like 3 out of 5 achievements. That's terrible. So I gave it another go, and this time I got it, but man, that was definitely one of the rougher ones in my career.
Yeah. Okay, good. Why don't we touch on that? What type of hunter you are? I mean, you currently have on PlayStation here 100% profile. I see it at level 41. So it's obviously fair to call yourself a completionist. But I mean, you're almost the next step of completionist, because I also was linked to a database, if you like, or a spreadsheet where you're actually tracked your completion percentage by day and things like this. So it's very, it's almost like the metagame within the game for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember doing that spreadsheet. It was kind of like a fun thing to see, like, okay, when was my PlayStation profile like at its lowest or at its worst? And there was definitely a period of time where I was not fond of buying DLC until it went on like a super sale. So like something like, let's say, Call of Duty, when it comes out with its 4 or 5 zombie maps, I was just letting them sit there and not do them. So it was dragging my completion down. And then one day in 2018, I actually got the trophy that was holding me back. It was in a NASCAR game, and I kind of like those games, but it was a really hard trophy, and it was even more harder for me because I didn't have a racing wheel.
Yes.
So once I finally got it, I was like, okay, that was the last one holding me back. I can go for 100% if I buy all these DLCs. So that's kind of what I did in 2018. I just took every game that I had outstanding DLC for and just went ahead and bought them. It was like $100 or something. Kind of hurt, but then I spent the whole summer doing like Call of Duty Zombies. I think there was Prey, Moon Crash DLC, The Division. Kind of let that sit there for a long time. And yeah, on July 18th, 2018, I finally hit 100%, and I've kept it ever since.
Yes, congratulations. It's a fantastic achievement. It's something that I can only dream of, listeners. You know, it affects me greatly, obviously, at night. Keeps me up all night. But that's wonderful. What I have to ask then, obviously, you know, coming from the other side of it, looking at your profile, is you do play a wide range of games. Because you've hit the 100%, and I'm sure that's important to maintain, are there games that you'll avoid playing now because you're worried on the PlayStation side about not being able to finish them?
Yeah, it's definitely always a worry, especially for new games, because you don't know if they're going to like have glitch trophies and whatnot. So that's always scary. I try not to play brand new games that I don't really want to play because I know they're going to have DLC. I'd rather just buy like a complete edition. For example, Spider-Man. I still haven't got around to that. But now that they've got a Game of the Year edition with all DLC, definitely going to check it out soon. But yeah, I try to stay away from hard games. The main reason not to keep my tag at 100%, but is I just don't have the patience I used to have for hard games. So like there's like an ultra rare trophy. It's more than likely going to require like some patience that I just don't have anymore. So yeah, long gone are the days of like sitting down for an hour trying to figure out a Dark Souls boss. I'd rather just plow through it and enjoy the story with some fun gameplay.
It's one of the great things about getting older, isn't it? Your tolerance, I suppose. Well, your time tolerance is different. You have many other things pressing on you as well. I understand.
Yeah.
So, look, I'd like to ask you. I'm pretty sure I know the essence of your name here is a Final Fantasy VII sort of a reference, but I'll still ask anyway, you know, for the listeners. How did you come up with the Aeris Flower Girl for PSN, and why did you choose it, I suppose?
Yeah, so it's definitely from Final Fantasy VII. That's one of my favorite games of all time. And I just, ever since I played it for the first time, I really liked Aeris. Of course, her name is mostly Aerith in the US, but the original Final Fantasy VII has her name as Aeris. And yeah, eventually, like, I just kind of got tired of my old gamer tag because it technically spells puppies wrong, but there's a story to that we can get to in a little bit. But anyways, once PSN finally allowed you to change your PSN, I changed it to Aeris, Flower Girl. I would have taken Aerith with the TH, but it wasn't available. So I just stuck with Aeris. And then I changed pretty much all my online stuff to same thing, like Discord and Twitch and all that.
And then, look, I'm going to have to ask on the Xbox side as well. So it's 1,000 X puppies. Is that correct? What's the story behind that?
Yeah, so back in 2003, when I was playing Halo 1, you could make your name, but it was only 11 letters. So I wanted to do 101 Dalmatians. That was like my favorite movie back then, but it wouldn't fit. There was not enough letter space on Halo 1. So I changed it to, you know, 13-year-old me, changed it to 1,001 Puppies, which would only fit if you did P-U-P-B-Y-S. So ever since then, I just kind of kept that tag. That's been like my Halo and Xbox tag. I still have it as X1000X Puppies because it's so old. So I don't plan on changing that. Yeah, so now I have completely different PSN and Xbox tags.
I like that. I think there's something to be said for keeping the two profiles separate. But look, I must ask. It sounds like you were very heavily into Xbox, and then I think maybe towards the end of 2014, 2015, you moved across to the PlayStation. If I'm correct, now I'm not sure whether this was because of I'm not exactly sure why. Perhaps you'd like to let us know. Why did you come to the dark side?
Sure. So there was probably two, three main reasons. First, obviously PS4 crossed off Xbox with a $100 difference in price. And back then I was working in like retail, so it wasn't like I had a ton of money to throw around. So $100 was a big difference. Number two, most of my real life friends were moving over to PlayStation, probably for the same reasons as me, like cost, and which brings me to my third point, the exclusives, they just look better. Halo kind of had, or not Halo, Xbox kind of had Halo and Killer Instinct, and neither of those, I mean, I love Halo, but like having to their only main game being like a rehash of the first four Halos was kind of off-putting when PlayStation had things coming out like Bloodborne and Horizon and all that. So that was my main reason for the Switch. I wouldn't say I regret it, but it is kind of annoying having two tags, because like if all my trophies are on my Xbox profile, I'd have nearly 700,000 gamer score by now, and vice versa.
You've opened the door there, because obviously, you know, we only have so much time, so balancing, you know, two, and I mean they're two sizable profiles on both systems, we won't sell yourself short there. How do you decide now what to play? Are you like, especially for a lot of these games now in the current generation where they're on both systems, so how do you choose whether you play for achievements or trophies, or do you do both?
Right now I mainly play non-exclusives on PlayStation. They're a little bit more reliable as far as, so Xbox One, you have to be like online to earn achievements, and that can be really annoying if you don't have a connection or Xbox Live is down. So I mainly play on PS4, but I do, I'm a staff member on xboxachievements.com, and I help run tournaments. So when there's a tournament, I will jump on Xbox and play some games.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. I like that. So, look, why don't we... Well, first off, look, I have to ask, because it's rare that we get someone that actually plays the Xbox on this show. Look, I love to, you know, talk about how I turn it on occasionally, Eris, but, you know, I very rarely find the time to actually play the thing. But it's wonderful to have someone on that actually does play it. So I have to ask your opinion. I'm sure you probably watched the showcase the other day. What are you feeling about Xbox moving into the next generation?
My feelings are pretty similar to the One. There's not really a whole lot coming out that's going to make me want to buy one day one. Obviously, Halo is a big thing. It's been a big part of my life, massive part of my life. But, you know, I don't really want to run out and buy a Series X just to play Halo. You know, there's going to have to be a couple of games that follow it. Fable looks pretty fun, but I'm not sure if I'm going to, like I said, that's not really enough to justify going out and buying a system, especially I don't think we know the price points yet, so...
No, I can understand. It's a very funny time. I think both the consoles seem to be sort of hedging their bets against each other. No one's prepared to say what the cost is till the other one does. So we'll have to wait and see. So yeah. Look, you've opened the door on competitions here as well. Now we're going to get into this a little bit in the topic, but you did mention you're a staff member on True Achievements. Now we recently had a wonderful guest on the wonderful Eigen Space, who organizes some events on PSN profiles for the PlayStation community. What is it about competition play that you enjoy on consoles?
Yeah, so I'm actually a staff member on Xbox Achievements, not True Achievements.
Oh, sorry, Xbox.
Yeah, but I don't know. I like that trash talk. You know, I grew up on a ton of Halo and I was really good at it. So, you know, it's just like if someone would challenge me to a 1v1, I'd be like, okay, you know, I'm gonna easily win this. So ever since then, like, I've just been really competitive in nature, and the achievement tournaments are really fun for me because I'm pretty good at unlocking achievements fast. I know where to go for shortcuts I can take, so it's been really fun. The current tournament, I kind of ran out of time in the current tournament because of Last of Us. It took too long to get here, and I wanted to play it. So I'm getting beaten up in the current tournament, but I'm still helping run it and verify scores and stuff, so it's been fun.
Okay, perfect. We might come back to that in the sort of topic, but why don't we just take a little look there? Now that we've got to know you here, why don't we take a little look at what you've been playing? Now, I don't mind if you want to focus on the PlayStation side or the Xbox. I'll leave it up to you. Do you want to throw out a couple of things for our listeners that you've been playing recently?
Sure. So in the last 2 months, the biggest two games I've played are Assassin's Creed Odyssey and The Last of Us 2, both on PlayStation. Both were really enjoyable. Odyssey kind of ran on a little long because of all the DLC and added missions. So it could have done with a little cut on the content, or either that or take a break. But I don't really take breaks and come back to things. I like to beat them all in one sitting. And The Last of Us, that was really, really good. I liked it a lot better than the first one. I know there's a lot of controversy out there surrounding multiple different things, but I mean, I really enjoyed it. I don't really look too much into the hate. I just kind of play games to enjoy them.
Yeah, I can understand that. Well, let's just pick up on Odyssey if we can for a second here. As you said, it is a massive game. I mean, even Origins was starting to extend the games the game before, but by the time we got to this one, it's over 100. I'm not sure how long it took you, but a weak skilled gamer like myself, it took over 100 hours for me to do all the DLC. So it's a sizable. It's a sizable chunk of time. Now, was I right in reading that you also had a glitch in this game as well?
Yeah, so two of the trophies revolve around killing Cyclops. They were added as DLC, free DLC. And unfortunately, they did not spawn for me. I never got the mission. I didn't get the enemy. So I actually had to sit on it for about 3 weeks until they released the patch. And my only option, if they didn't release a patch, would have to be to like replay the game and hope they show up. And so nobody really knew what caused them to show up for some and not show up for others. So yeah, that was kind of annoying. But I mean, one day they finally released the patch. I saw it pop up on my PlayStation and I went straight there. I was like, let me get these trophies.
Yes. Oh, that's insane. That would that sort of thing would just finish me on a game. I would just delete it. But yeah, that it's wonderful that it worked out. Now I have to ask, did you enjoy the Fate of Atlantis more, or did you enjoy the Legend of the First Blade more, the expansion?
You know, I actually enjoyed the First Blade more. Mm. I really liked the backstory and the gameplay and the setting. By the time I got to Fate of Atlantis, I have to admit, I was getting pretty burned out. So that definitely dipped my enjoyment of it. But it was still pretty fun. I liked the first one the best, I think. The first episode with, is it Elysium or something? And the second one, The Underworld, that was pretty dumb. I was like ready to get out of that place.
Yeah.
The third one was pretty good too. So I think my enjoyment was only dipped because it was getting like long.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was still enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. And then you've just recently, as you said, you've just recently platted The Last of Us Part 2. I mean, you know, as you said, whatever controversy, it doesn't matter because I enjoyed it too. And if we both enjoyed it, that's really all that matters, you know, because we're the ones talking. But, you know, it's a wonderful game, a wonderful narrative game or whatever. One of the things I loved about this game, and because you're, you know, a trophy huntress as well, I'd like to ask you about this, is that, you know, a lot of the AAA games like Assassins, they have a huge amount of collectibles. They're everywhere, you know, and sometimes they track them, sometimes they don't, sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. One of the things I loved about The Last of Us 2, now I'm sure you have an opinion on this, so I'm not sure if we had on the same page though. One of the things I loved was the way that you could use a clear save to go back and clean up the collectibles in such an easy manner, and with all the checkpointing as well, it became for me very, very easy in what is, you know, like still a reasonably large game at 25 to 30 hours. How did you find all that side of it? Did you find it that way, streamlined, or not so much?
Yeah, funny you bring that up. A lot of people who know me know that I really hate collectibles. And when I opened up the collectible guide and saw 286, I was like, yes. Good God. But I didn't mind so I went for all the collectibles on my first playthrough, just so I didn't have to worry about them when I was cleaning up miscellaneous stuff. And I didn't mind all the notes. They were really fun to read. Things like, you know, what people were going through either during the pandemic or on Outbreak Day. I really enjoyed that. But the random useless collectibles like trading cards and coins, I was like, come on, really? You know, why am I picking these up? And so in the end, you know, I got through it. I was so ready to be done.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. It's funny. We did a deep dive a couple of weeks ago on the game, and we didn't because the person I did it with, they're not a trophy hunter at all. They just play games for the enjoyment of it, listeners, you know, which, as we know, it's shocking. Why would you do that? But they do, you know, this happens. Not for our series, but it does happen for some people. So, you know, and we never talked about really the collectibles because they weren't a major part of his game. You know, he didn't worry about the 200 or whatever, but it is an interesting thing, and it's a wonderful thing they put in, along with the accessibility as well. Now, I just want to dig back a little bit further, a little bit selfishly. I do this, Aries. I don't know if you're familiar with this or not, but you'll just have to tolerate it. I apologize.
Yeah, no worries.
You have a game here that I played a long time ago, it feels like, but then I dropped off it. The Talos Principles, a puzzler of sorts, I think. It's a very unique style game. How did you find this game?
Oh, man. Yeah, so actually, that brings up another story. When I played Final Fantasy VII Remake earlier this year, the game was so good that it actually put me, for the first time, in a gaming slump where I didn't want to actually play anything. I just kind of wanted to laze about on Netflix. And it wasn't until about a month and a half later when I played the Talos Principle that it broke me out of that slump because I loved it so much. I'm a big fan of Crow Team. I grew up on the Serious Sam series. That was one game that my best friend and I played a lot together. So I actually played Talos Principle just based on the developer, and I ended up loving it. I tried to do everything without looking it up. And then when like I finally threw in the towel, I would watch a video and I'd be like, holy shit, like I would have never figured this out. So that game was great. I loved it.
Yeah. It's a fantastic game. And look, the only other one I want to ask you about here, only because I started this recently and I don't have nostalgia for the series, which I think is a bit of a problem. I think I need to work into it to understand it better because I know it's very beloved, is, of course, the Saints Row, the third remaster. Now, everyone tells me it is a wonderful remaster. And from what I've played, as I said, I'm not familiar with the series. It seems good. Did you enjoy it? Is it a good remaster version?
So yeah, another funny story about this game. I'm glad you're picking all the great games. I enjoyed it the first time I played it. Yeah, I played it on 360 and I enjoyed the heck out of it. And then I was like begging a friend to get it so we could play it on the PS4 together. And man, it was just full of glitches. Like him and I ran into so many glitches and like the gameplay was just very outdated compared to like Saints Row 4. And other crazy co-op games we had played together. So overall, I actually did not enjoy the remaster. And I kind of had to apologize to my friend. I was like, this was not that bad 7 years ago or whenever it was. But yeah, we ran into a lot of glitches. Maybe they're fixed now. But when the game first came out, it was just like dozens of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that I'm picking all the good games. But the more I look at your PlayStation profile, the more I mean, I come down here and yeah, sure, I see the Music Racer and I see a few things here that are suspect. But you know, 50 Words by Paggy perhaps. But you know, there is a lot of quality here as well. And one of the things that I like is, you know, we made a little reference when we were talking beforehand. But you have a few visual novels on your profile, but you do seem to read them as well by the time limits there. Sorry, I stall listeners because, you know, maybe sometimes I don't read them. But look, I'm sure perhaps the same is for you. Do you like the visual novel genre? I mean, I know it's very beloved in the trophy and achievement hunting circles, but not always for the content.
I really fell in love with Steins Gate. That's definitely like top tier visual novel. The Steins Gate series is definitely my favorite. And then obviously they came out with one around December and I really enjoyed that. Holy cow. But the visual novels as a whole, I actually sometimes get kind of bored with them because I like fall asleep trying to read them sometimes. I'm more of a, you know, have to be doing something or I'll fall asleep kind of person because I don't sleep much. But yeah, the most recent ones I've played, I kind of got like part way through most of them and then got bored. So you might see a couple of days in length, but I kind of skipped through some parts. Of course, there was these, what were those games called? I have them on my shelf. I can't see. Code Realize. Those were pretty good. I played through 2 out of 3 of them. One of them I kind of skipped. But those were pretty enjoyable. Of course, those are Otome novels, so like guys may not find them as good as girls would. But yeah, as a whole, like I sometimes I get bored, but sometimes like I'll pick up, it's kind of like picking up a good book. You know, you read through it and you're like, wow, that's pretty good. And obviously the trophies are easy because if you miss something, you can just speed through it following a guide and pick up everything you missed. So
what can I share with you this week? Well, look, I've got a couple of things, and seeing we're giving the Xbox a bit of love, what if I start there? Because I have made a return of sorts to there lately. And look, I knocked off the Fragments of Him. Now, this game is available on PlayStation as well. It's only a 100% game, but of course a full 1000G completion on the Xbox. In fact, I believe it has 2 stacks on the PlayStation NNA and an EU. So look, what it is, it's a narrative, highly narrative driven walking simulator. It's a really touching, if sad, story, perhaps more for your mature gamer. I don't know that it would hold much interest for the shooting crowd perhaps, but look, it is a beautiful title. It's all done in black, white and shades of gray, a sort of a minimalistic approach, and it's just a matter of sort of clicking on different objects and items that are always highlighted, and that just furthers the narrative. It's very simple. There is a chapter select afterwards, and they're potentially 2 missable trophies, but you'll get them within a few minutes if you just use the chapter select after, so you can sit and relax. takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours maximum. And there's some wonderful music in there. And it's just, I mean, it's just a life story, I suppose, of a boy growing into a man and his relationships, and then how it goes from there. I won't say any more to spoil it, but it's well worth your Sunday afternoon time if you haven't come across it, I think. The other one that I'll drop out for Xbox, because there's been a little bit of spam, I'll be honest with you, listeners. There's some wonderful spam on the Xbox that never seems to have made it to the PlayStation yet. So you know, but, you know, that's for another time, perhaps. But the other one I'll drop out, and I noticed this came up on the PlayStation Store the other day. Of course, we know that Telltale is no longer with us, but, you know, the Skybound picked up the licenses and carried forth with a lot of the properties. Now, I believe, well, I'm not sure if they picked up all of them or just The Walking Dead, so I'm not sure if they have this one or someone else, but it, of course, referring to the Telltale Batman series. There were two seasons of that, and for me, that was one of my favorite ones. I'm not a massive Batman fan or anything, but it really got me in. And one of the things I actually liked about it was how dark, you know, and sort of gritty and noir it really was. And then you had these flashes of color. And what attracted me to this game this time is, and I don't know if you've seen it on the store, probably doesn't interest you if you've already played it, but is the Batman Shadows Edition. So what this basically is, it's a black and white version, if you like, a very noir version of the both seasons sold as a package. And instead of just total black and white, it throws splashes of color. And you're like, well, you know, I'd rather just play it in color like it was intended. But it really works. It's sort of going for capturing the comic book essence of the game, I think. And so you know, you've got these black and white scars, and then you've got like this, you know, blood, and it'll just be bright red against the black backdrop. Or, you know, you'll have the blue of the police lights or something, and, you know, the green of the mask, the Joker's mask. And it's really vivid. And I'm looking forward to playing it this way. If you've already platted it or completed it and you own it, there is actually an upgrade, if it so interests you, I think for like $8 Australian or something, where you can get this shadow mode. There's no extra trophies or gamer score, but, you know, if you haven't played it, it's definitely something to consider. Now, it doesn't look like you can change between those. So once you start one or the other, that's the way you're gonna have to progress. But look, I was a little hesitant if there would be enough replayability value in wanting to play it again with this, but I think there will be. It was a good story to start with, but now seeing it in this different way, and yes, it's upscaled a little bit, and I'll be interested to see later on. I believe it was in the second series in particular, there was dropping, there was all sorts of garbage, you know, stalls, faces not animating or something, except for some people. So I believe that's all been cleaned out as well, but just a different way to play. Now, moving across to the PlayStation this week, and what can I throw at you? Well, I'm going to start with this little Max and the Book of Chaos. So this is a Jandusoft game, and I jokingly and lovingly refer to them as the Jandusoft jank, because these games, they definitely have, they appeal to me, I suppose. They definitely have that quality in them. So they, of course, did the Smoot Summer Games recently, the Turbo Controller Fest. They did the TV Calamity game, which I really enjoyed as well, which was a sort of a top-down shooter, if you like, very arcadey in its essence. And now they've come up with this Max and the Book of Chaos. Now, there is a story here overarching, which is, you know, of limited value, I think, but it's nice that it's there. But the premise or the gameplay of the game are shooting galleries, basically. You sort of, they're 2D, if you like, just single screen shooting galleries. And look, it gets progressively harder. But one thing I've realized with these games by Jandusoft is that they're not, like, they appear to be skill games, but they're not really, because with this game, there are many pickups. Now, it's random what pickups you get, and, you know, some of the pickups are immunities, some stronger weapons and things. So if you're lucky enough, and particularly on the boss fights, which can be challenging, if you're lucky enough to get the right pickups at the right time, you will pass it. So sometimes it becomes very hard to beat the boss, but then you do it, you know, 3 or 4 times, you get the right pickups, it's really simple or whatever else. The other interesting thing is one of the bosses in particular is kind of challenged, but he has 2 phases, and it seems random which phase comes first, or even if both phases come. So you can get sort of lucky there, which look, I like. I know that would annoy a lot of people. They just want the game to play as it is, but It definitely means if you're having trouble and you persist, you will get through it. I'd say this game is around 4 to 5 hours. But again, if you're skilled with the game or you're stacking it, because it is an EU and NA stack, you could probably do this in as short as an hour and a half. Definitely if you have experience with these sort of shooting gallery games. The only tip I'd put out or preface is that you can run two sort of builds. You can run a dash build with your specials, the stars unlock these special abilities, listeners. And the dash build will let you dash through the projectiles the enemy fires. So this is obviously the highly skilled player's approach. And I was talking to Mick, a recent guest from Nofs Guides, the owner of Nofs Guides, and he told me that this was the method he used and, you know, promoted in the guide. And I think that's probably the very valid way to play it. But if you're like me and, you know, you have trouble with these sort of games, there is a build which will give you two extra potions, which in effect are hearts in this game. And that does make you very sort of very powerful. It sort of allows you to adopt the god stance, I think, at times, and just brace yourself and hope to beat the boss. So look, it's wonderful. Whether you'd want to play it twice or not probably depends on your you know, susceptibility to jank, but once, I think it's definitely worth it. And it's only a few dollars, which is always great for this company. Now, we're going to talk a little NASCAR later on in the episode, so only, you know, briefly there. I did jump in on Heat 5. I'm not really sure because I have Heat 4 and Heat 3 in various stages. But look, it is ultimately the same game. But as I said before, it does play wonderfully with a wheel. But, you know, if you're interested in the series, you might as well just pick up 2 or 3 or 4 if you like, because they're all the same game rather than the fifth one. And then, I mean, we should give some love, I suppose, to the White Boys with Attitude, The Pursuit of Happiness. Of course, this one here drops some DLC, some lovely DLC for a buck or something. And look, yes, of course, it plays exactly the same as the Perp game, where you can just randomly, randomly wank the controller off, if you like, and that will get you the completion. Again, it requires a perfect no miss of the notes score to get the final gold trophy. But look, overall, very easy trophies. It might take you a few goes, but there's nothing too painful there. And of course, it does come packed with another single from their album. So for a dollar, you're really getting value. And, you know, I notice around the traps, listen, I don't like to preach, you know, I don't want to preach to you, but I noticed that there was a little bit of disgruntlement, perhaps, you know, that this free game suddenly had a paid DLC. I'll throw hundreds of dollars at Rattalike or thousands of dollars at visual novels for the plat, but your dollar? CJ, please. But look, that's what it is. So go in forewarned. Also go forewarned that now they've found this, perhaps this won't be the first DLC. So if this is an issue for you, and rightly so, you know, plant your flag and stand on the hill. I would support that. Then this may be a game that you want to avoid. But look, if you're not a cheap bastard and you can afford a dollar to get the single, which is probably cheaper than it would cost buying it anywhere else with any other group, then, you know, have a look and earn some trophies while you do. So look, the last one I'll throw at you, and yes, I picked up Skater XL. I haven't got to it yet. You're not surprised, are you? Yes, I've got Destroy Your Humans. Haven't had a chance yet. Maybe today. We'll see. I have been spending a lot of time in The Ghosts of Tsushima, but, you know, I think that game demands it. It just seems to go on forever. Look, it's growing on me. I will say that. I do like the narrative stories of it much more than the collectathon. There are so many foxes in that game. It is insane. I saw some figure about how many millions of foxes had been patted by PlayStation gamers so far. And look, you're probably going to you're probably going to pat close to 1,000 of them in your playthrough, because they're just everywhere anyway, those shrines. So, but that aside, I'm really enjoying I think maybe they're shrines as well, are they? The sort of where you have to do the jumping. It's a very Assassin's Creed-esque, like jumping puzzles, if you like, and swinging puzzles to get to that final shrine to pray there and get the reward. I like those things, but they're a lot, you know, looser on the ground. They're not everywhere. So perhaps that is why. But look, I think there's probably a lot of depth into this game if you want to put it in the combat. But for me, I'm basically just smashing the triangle button. So it has become a hack and slash-a-thon. Although, I did experiment a little with the R2, which can change stances. I hadn't bothered until this point in Act 2, but there is some variety here. But look, you know, it's very easy. I mean, you know, like the parry is, it's very wide. There's plenty of time to do it. There's plenty of time to break their attack. It's definitely not Souls-like or anything like that. So it's a very easy, but, you know, enjoyable of sorts game. And then the only other one I'll throw out, and we'll probably get into this more perhaps next week, because I'm on a bit of a spam kick. I've decided that August I'm just gonna clean house of all these sort of trophy games, you know, in preparation for the new Xbox, of course, coming later in the year. And I stumbled on the 112th seed. So I may not be telling you anything here, listeners, but if I am, I would suggest this game. It's very easy. It's a very easy puzzler game. In fact, some of the levels are insanely easy. And it has this wonderful trope, though, in this game where it takes a level to explain a new mechanic to you, which I really like. So rather than just a whole lot of text, you know, here's the new mechanic, good luck, it sort of teaches you how to use, you know, the raindrop or the box or whatever else in a level, and then you start to progressively use it. It does have this weird thing within the first 30 levels where it puts some really random easy level for no reason, you know, followed by, you know, I suppose harder, but not too hard levels. There are some fantastic video walkthroughs if you do need them. And of course, you only need to do the first 30 levels for the plat. It'll probably take you, you know, if you get stuck or if you need to check a guide, it'd probably take you half an hour. If not, you can probably do it in like 20 minutes or something, I'd say. There are three stacks at the moment, the Japanese, the NA, and the EU for a couple of bucks. And I'm sure we'll see the HK in the near future. So now, we're going to talk what I think is a pretty big feat to do in 1 month, and I want to hear about it. I want to hear what was involved with it, and I want to hear how you managed to drive yourself through that month, because I'm sure it wasn't all bliss and roses. So we'll be right back, listeners. Just take a quick break. Okay, listeners, so welcome back. So what we're going to do now is we're going to have a look at this. Now, this was brought to my attention by this I'm Starling on Yabro, he's been wonderful for our community. I understand he's wonderful for everyone, you know, with his stylings around the place. But he linked me an article a month or so ago here from Kotaku, and it was about how an accountant had scored 132 gamer score in 1 month. Now, I know, listeners, some of you are like, oh, who cares, CJ? It's more ratter garbage, you know, that's all you talk about these days, Paugy, sometimes you, whatever else. But look, that's still an impressive number, I think. And I think that takes a lot of mental fortitude. And also, it must take a pretty good reason to do it as well. So Aries, I want to get into this. Now, this was part of a gamer score league or something like this. Is that correct?
Yeah, so XboxAchievements.com holds a gamer score league every once a year. And it's basically like teams get together, and the whole goal is, as a team, score more gamer score than your opponents. So that's kind of where that stemmed from. Now, the plan when the month started was not to do 132,000 gamer score. So the competition actually was pretty tough for the first 3 weeks. There was a guy who, he said he had like every Xbox One game, or like 90% of them, like in his library, and he was retired, so he just could play all day and any game he wanted. And I still had to work, so my teammate and I, because it was teams of two, we really had to work to get around him. And by the time we did, we were 24 days into the 29-day competition, and when we got to that point, I was like, I still had a ton of easy games like Radalika and, like you said, sometimes you and all those games. So I was like, okay, you know, the only goal I have left, like, what if I can beat the Gamer Score League record for most gamer score earned during an event? And that's pretty much what I did.
It's impressive. So, and as you say, like, I mean, you know, we continually hear about, you know, the people at the top of the leaderboards, the people that produce these big scores, you know, for a month or month in, month out or whatever. All it is just, you know, them throwing their money and their time around, you know, and they have all the time in the world to play. But it's very different, as you say, when you're working as well. How many, like, hours a day did you have to play in this month, roughly?
I didn't really track. It's probably like I would get home. Well, actually, the pandemic kind of sped it up a little bit, because about 2 weeks into the competition, we were actually, you know, told to stay home and work from home. So I didn't have to get up early to like shower and do my makeup and stuff. I could just go straight to, like, I could get up, take a quick shower or wash my face or whatever, and then go straight into work. And at 5:30 on the nose, I could clock out, throw my work laptop over in the corner and get straight to gaming rather than having to commute and wind down and all that. So that did increase my time. But normally, like, if I wasn't doing anything with family or friends, I would be trying to earn as much gamer score in quick games as I could per day. Maybe like 5 to 6 on the weekday, and then like 10 to 12 on the weekends.
Yeah, it's still sizable. I noticed from reading your blog as well that you're a bit of a night owl as well, which you're lucky. You're still young enough, obviously, to be able to do that, which is impressive for me. But so I imagine that helps. But what about the, you know, look, I play a lot of these games that I imagine you played as well to get there to the 132K. It's not all just about time and being able to afford the games. I mean, actually pushing through this many games in 1 month, I would imagine takes a bit of a mental toll on you. Did you feel that, or was the adrenaline of the competition enough to push you through?
There was definitely a mental toll from playing all the crap. The goal was to kind of find games that were like hidden gems. And I did. I found a couple of games that I was like, oh, well, that wasn't so bad. I like that.
Yeah.
So I actually had a list of 10 games that I found that I was like, oh, that was really good. At the top of that list was a game called Air, A-E-R.
Mm.
It was like a little indie game where you fly around as a bird and like look at this, like, I guess you're kind of stopping an evil, which is, you know, cliche and whatever. But I really enjoyed that game. It's about a 2-hour completion. In conjunction with that, I would play fun games like Life is Strange 2. I completed that during the tournament, which was actually my longest completion, I think 14 hours. And so here's a funny one. I completed Dark Souls Remastered during the tournament.
Yes, I saw this. Now, that is not the usual sort of game you would think about as a quick plat or a quick completion.
No, not at all. And the thing was, I've actually played that game so much. It's one of my favorites of all time. So when I went into it, I knew exactly what to do to get the platinum, or well, the 1000 gamer score as quickly as possible. And with some help from some Xbox community members who could drop things like weapons for me, I was able to complete it in just under 10 hours. So that being one of my favorite games of all time really helped break up the monotony of the terrible, you know, quick 1000 gamer score games.
Yes, yeah. You sort of need that, though, as you say, I think, don't you? Otherwise, you know, it's all well and good to smash these short things, but you just go insane otherwise over time. Now, look, we had Aigen on recently, and she started a females event, a maidens event, I believe, on the PlayStation. Now, I'm not as deeply immersed in the Xbox community as I am in the PlayStation side, so I don't know it as well, but one of the things that I find in the PlayStation community side is that most events, and I don't mean to be biased or bigoted in any way, most of the competition seems to be very strongly, you know, populated, if you like, by male gamers. Now, I know there are some female gamers. Is it much the same in these Xbox events on True Achievements, do you find? Or
yeah, actually, currently on Xbox Achievements, there's not really, there's only like maybe one other active female member. It's kind of a it's not as popular of a site as True Achievements anymore, so there's not a lot of like members in total. But yeah, I've noticed that, you know, gaming, there's a lot of hobbies that I do, like gaming, that are mostly like male dominant. So that kind of, I will agree that that's kind of pushed me on in the past as a competitive person to be like, well, I can beat all these boys.
Yeah, look, I totally agree. I mean, most of the, again, you know, coming from the PlayStation side, but most of the most competitive gamers I know are females, actually. So I don't think there's any, you know. I mean, there's obviously there's no bias on the consoles or whatever. It's equal for everybody, I think, which is the wonderful thing about it. But that's interesting. Now, I want to turn to the ugly side. Well, not the ugly side, the more practical side of it. I love hearing, you know, and we've already referenced this, that, you know, to get these massive scores, you just have to drop a shitload of money. Now, I already know the answer to this, but I'm going to let you say from reading your blog, what did this month roughly cost you in games to achieve this 132K?
Yeah, so I was kind of interested. Like, I used to watch the GamerScore League from the sidelines and watch these people drop massive amount of money trying to win it. And I was like, how much exactly are they spending? So this year, with finances not being so tight anymore, I was like, okay, I'm going to go for the win. And if I do win, I want to see how much it costs. So in the end, all of the expenses for March were $835 to win the Gamerscore League.
Yeah. Which, look, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that's too bad, because I don't think a lot of people understand that a lot of these games, like your Atalaika and your other spammy sort of titles, they're not that expensive, are they, really?
No, most games that I played were $5 to $10 or under.
Yeah.
The most expensive game I bought was Dark Souls. I had to order it off Amazon. It was like $22.
Mm.
But I think I also mentioned it in my blog, but I can't remember. There's only like 5 games that I paid for that were more than like $15. So, or more than $10, actually. There wasn't a whole lot of games I bought that were expensive. So I played 133 games. So if you kind of do the math, it was not a very expensive per game cost. So
not at all. Now, how, you know, obviously Game Pass is a wonderful feature of the Xbox. Did this factor into your gaming choices at all? I mean, it seems perfect for a competitive sort of achievement hunter, having so many games available on that subscription service. But does it work out that way for you or not so much?
Yeah, so as far as the tournament's concerned, I bought a month of Game Pass. I think it was $15 to have the live and whatever. And I think I think it was 8 games I played from the Game Pass. I pretty much picked off all of the quick ones.
Hmm.
So if you do the math, it came to like $2 a game, which is not bad at all. And even currently, like every couple of months, I'll re-sign up for Game Pass and play the new games that have come on there that I wanted to play. So that's what I'm kind of doing right now. Like, as soon as the tournament's over, I think I'm going to try out, like, either The Outer Worlds or Wolfenstein Youngblood. They're both on Game Pass. And pretty, not too difficult of a completion. I love Game Pass. I think it's one of the greatest things Xbox has going for them.
Yeah, I like that. Now, look, tolerate me on this next question, because when I was doing some reading about you, particularly in your blog in 2014, and then I wasn't quite as convinced in the last 2 years, but then you haven't written as much, so I wasn't not convinced either. But I want to ask you this. Do you see gaming as a bit of a job?
Sometimes, yeah. More so because of the completionist nature. Like, sometimes I'll play a game that I was like, really, like, you know, that was whatever. I don't really, would never play it again. And then I'm like, okay, now I've got all these trophies or achievements I have to clean up. Now I have to play the whole game again on hard or something like that. So in that case, yeah, kind of sucks. And you're like, I really wish this was over. Either that, or I could get rid of my completionist nature and just throw it away after I'm done with one playthrough. But most of the time, I try to pick games that I think I would enjoy a lot, or either that, or they're free. I'll give them a shot if they're free, it's like through PlayStation Plus or Games with Gold on Xbox.
Yeah, I like that. Now, the other thing I want to ask you about is, you know, a lot of trophy and achievement hunters, they love statistics. They love numbers. I think they love that more than anything else sometimes, Eris. Do you know, you seem to be very well documented and stuff like this in your numbers and your stuff. Putting together these 133 games like you did for this competition, that doesn't happen in like 5 minutes. You know, there's some research and work goes into that. Do you enjoy that side of it as well, finding these sort of games, reading about them, putting them, you know, in a list, getting them all ready to go? Because it is a lot of work. I think that's fair to say, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what I had to do, like for the Gamerscore League. Like you said, I had to put together a list. I think my list was about 200 games long, and they're easy to find because you can search on the True Achievement website. You can search by easiest game by ratio. So like games that are closer to 1.0 are extremely easy, while a game with like 4.0 or 5.0 is like super hard. So I just kind of searched by, you know, by a descending order to find the easiest 1.0 games and put them all on a list I like. And I included like price and time to complete and stuff like that. So that's how I came up with the list. And I just kind of kept picking them off either when they were on sale or what I felt like playing. Stuff like that.
I like that. Now, do you have enough left on your list, do you think, for a future attempt at this again, or was this a one-time thing and you won't try for a win again?
The 132K, definitely not. Obviously, as you've probably seen, the likes of Redalica, they release weekly. So, like, if you give it a whole year, there's, like, 50 new games I could try out next time. But I haven't really decided. Obviously, it's a lot of mental fortitude to win a GamerScore League. And if somebody signs up with, like, you know, the lesser GamerScore you have when you sign up, the better, because the more games you have available. So, like, it's harder to win for someone like me versus someone with half my GamerScore who hasn't played a Rattalaika game. So I haven't really decided. I'm kind of a spur of the moment person. So when spring rolls around next year, I will see where I'm at and consider it.
Yeah, I like that. I have one more question on that line, but seeing you open the door on Rattalaika, one of the things that I hear a lot about, you know, from the top hunters, I mean, Hakum is continually bitched about it on this show as well, but everywhere, and many of them have, the fact that the problem with Rattalaika, and look, as I said, listeners, Rattalaika is a friend and, you know, of the show. I receive codes, so therefore, you know, take it as will. I have no problem with that company, but having said that, I know that a lot of them do because of the number of stacks of games available. Up until recently with the Vita, we were looking at, you know, 6 to 8 stacks. It's now been pared down a little bit as they've dropped Vita support. But one of the wonderful things about Xbox is there's usually only one stack of a game. Now, I know there's exceptions with PC sometimes and region, but by and large, there's only one stack of these shorter games. Do you like that? The fact that you don't have to play the same game maybe 6 to 8 times in a competition like this?
I've actually never done that on PlayStation, so I don't know how grueling it is to suffer through the same game, like at least 4. You'd have to do a Vita trick to get the other ones, but at least 4 times in a row, I don't know if I could do it. Like some of those games that I played on Xbox that were like Rattalaika or sometimes you, I was just like, soon as the last achievement popping, I'm like uninstalling that right away. And yes, there were a lot of games like that. So of course there were more enjoyable ones. Rattalaika, I really liked Iron Snout, the one with the Bruce Lee pig. That was extremely fun. I was not expecting that. And another one, Super Box Land, kind of gave me Chips Challenge vibes. I don't know if you've ever heard of that game, but it's an old PC game. Yeah. And that's kind of what it reminded me of. It was really enjoyable playing the first time. But to go back to your question, like I actually played it again on the PlayStation to kind of set the remake up for my 200th platinum milestone. And the second time I played the box land, I was like, oh my God, this needs to end. This is terrible. So I can definitely see more than, you know, 2-3 stacks of the same game for, you know, trophy count. Not something I'd want to do.
Yeah, it's a difficult position because it definitely inflates the numbers too. I think their biggest argument, and which I understand, is of course that because you can play so many of these stacks, you don't in effect need to play other games, perhaps longer games as well, to boost your scores or to keep your score. Although the irony, of course, of this Aeris is that they were all smashing these Japanese VNs at massive prices before these companies came about. So it's much the same now. I think their problem is that the market's just open to everyone, perhaps. But it is interesting, but the amount of time that it sucks up, I think is interesting. Now, you said obviously as you go on, it becomes harder to win these things. That is very true. I understand that. But also you tend to get recognition, I find, in the community if you have one, and I imagine something as big as this. So do you frequently get offers now to become partners in competitions or to join teams?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. People were offering to join up for the next year, like right after it ended.
Yes.
So, like, I've gotten multiple offers to team up, yeah. And I tell them all the same thing. I'm like, look, I'm not even sure if I'm going to participate. You know, I'm not, I'm a spur of the moment person. Yeah. Like, it may become March next year, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that again. I want to play whatever game's coming out that March. That could affect it. So,
yeah. Yeah, I like
definitely.
That. Yeah, I like that. It's always interesting to talk to the person behind the gamer tag, if you like, because you sort of, you know, you look at their profile and you're like, wow, this is pretty intense. This is pretty full on, you know. And then you realize as you talk, like, and this is what I find with so many people having talked on this show, that yes, achievements and trophies and completion, they're massively important or whatever else. But at the essence, it is the fun of the game, isn't it? That just keeps us going, I think, which is wonderful. You know, we enjoy it as a base. And, you know, as you've said today, you started, you know, back with your multiplayer days or whatever else. And, you know, you've dallied in the spam, as we call it here, but you're playing a bit of everything. Now, there's one gaming series we didn't really touch on today, which I'd like to ask you about as we sort of wrap out, if that's okay.
Sure.
So I read that you've played or completed almost or maybe every NASCAR game, I think, since 2008, with, I'm assuming, the exception of the clone trophy list NASCAR Heat 5, which you made a comment on, I believe, as well. What is it about the NASCAR games that you love so much?
So I actually grew up a NASCAR fan. My family always went to the local track, which was Richmond in Virginia. So I grew up a NASCAR fan, and I've actually played almost every NASCAR game since 1994, actually. So,
oh, wow. Sorry.
Yeah, so, yeah, they have not been easy completions, let me tell you. Starting with, like, 2008 and 2009, there was just really rough challenges in that game. Then going all the way to, like, NASCAR Heat 1, which I believe was 2016, that was really difficult without a racing wheel, which I've never really gotten into. So, yeah, you're correct. There's only two NASCAR games I haven't completed. Obviously, the new one that just came out, which I'm not sure if I'm getting. I'm kind of sick of them for glitch reasons.
Yes.
Last year, there was a ton of glitches in them. And they're not increasing in quality. They're just releasing the same game every year. But I actually did not complete NASCAR 15 because I bought it on PC. So I was thinking about going and playing it before the servers shut down, just to say I've done it, but at the same time, like, kind of ready to move on from the 7th gen as much as I can, so.
Yeah, no, look, I understand. It's funny when I read that, because, you know, I wouldn't have assumed you played those games, obviously, just glancing at your profile, and when I read that comment, and of course, I love NASCAR, but not being American, I don't really understand the finer mechanics of it at all. I just like turning left, you know, and crashing and stuff like this, so it's wonderful, but when I picked up the first NASCAR Heat game, I had a wonderful time, but I do have a racing wheel, but I had huge trouble getting the speed ratings for some of the tracks. And it didn't occur to me, and I play a lot of racing games, but I just assume, you know, NASCAR's a bit of a stock standard. It'll be fine, you know, the car on the track. But there was so much of actually tweaking the car yourself you had to do to eke those couple of points I found at the end. And I don't know, maybe growing up with it, you knew all about that. It was easy for you. But one of the things that I love in the last couple is that they've abandoned that requirement now, that speed rating. I think it was 90 or 95.
Yeah, that's the trophy I was telling you about earlier that I could not get. And after probably like 3,000 laps at Atlanta, I finally got it. And yeah, I do know a little bit about the car setups, but I mostly just use like a YouTube how-to.
Oh, yes.
And the problem was the YouTube how-tos are for a racing wheel. Mm. So they can run like really loose, which gives you speed in NASCAR. And if you try to do that a controller, you're going to spin out and wreck.
Yes. Yeah.
So I finally hit that Atlanta lap on a controller. It was like, I don't know. It was like really euphoric.
I can imagine.
Because of course that immediately popped the platinum, which I had been missing for over a year and a half. So
yes, that would be almost enough, I imagine, to turn you off those sort of games completely. But yeah, I like it.
When they removed the speed trophies in NASCAR Heat 2, I was like, okay, I'm gonna get this one. Now I got nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
So
they are a funny game, because as you say, they're a generic port basically of the game the previous year at the point. But one of the things that I like, again, not, you know, just watching it occasionally on TV here, you know, god awful hours in the morning, is that they put these challenges in as well now, and I think they've been in for the last couple. These aren't the speed rating challenges, these are the actual real life events, if you like, that you replicate. And I think again, you know, for someone that has a passing interest in the series or whatever, they're fantastic as well. So I'm by no means, you know, selling this game as amazing. It does for its price, I think it's really it's really asking, you know, for a little bit. But having said that, those sort of challenges are awesome, and if you do have a racing wheel, this is a force feedback wheel that's decent. This is one of the few games that I think really utilizes it. I mean, I can really feel the grooves on the track with the car through the wheel, and the force feedback can be really, really strong on that wheel. So I think they've done a good job there, but I agree with you, the campaign and everything else is stock standard from year to year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agree.
Yeah. Well, that's perfect. I definitely wanted to touch on that while we had you here today. So look, it's been wonderful to talk to you and to get an insight into Xbox gaming as well, because we hear so little about it, unfortunately, on this show. I'll have to dig a bit deeper. But if people wanted to sort of, you know, follow on, or I suppose, you know, see your progress and stuff, what's the best way to do that if you're willing for that?
Yeah, I've never really been like one for social media. I don't have like a, I only have a Twitter to browse kind of thing. So, you can look at my PSN profiles and true achievements and just kind of that lets you see what I'm playing. And obviously the blog on Xbox achievements is kind of more for me. I just kind of post all of my games I played and kind of like a little review of sorts. So those are that's where you can kind of find me. I'm very active on Xbox achievements because I'm staff there, so I'm usually around. Obviously, that won't help you if you're a PlayStation person, but I'm also on the sister site, PlayStationTrophies.org, hanging around. So just those trophy and achievement hunting websites.
Perfect. And I'll put some of that in the show notes as well. And I would recommend if you've got, a spare 5 or, a couple of hours, perhaps, listeners, to check out the blog because yeah, I think you're very modest. Yes, there's some, general thoughts for yourself, but there's also some very in-depth numbers and particularly on the recent Gamerscore League, insights into what you were thinking and how you went about it, which is fascinating because we don't often get to hear about this sort of stuff, even though that it's going on all the time. So once again, I want to thank you so much for your time to this evening and for joining me, and it was truly a pleasure. So thank you, Eris.
Yeah, you're welcome. I had fun.
So there you go, listeners. I hope you enjoyed that interesting conversation where we touch a little on the Xbox. And again, thank you to Eris Flower Girl. It was wonderful, wonderful to hear from the other side as well. Look, we can game on all systems equally and have fun, but perhaps you already do that. Perhaps you already know that. Now, why don't we turn to the Push to Platinum Club shoutouts? Remember, if you want a shout-out, you can drop your platinum picture in the free to join PSN community on the PS4 or in the Discord, which is in the show notes in the show thread, and we'll give you a shout out for your hard work. So why don't we start today with Eigen Space, number 121 Donut County, and I believe she enjoyed this game very, very much. Look, it's what's not to enjoy? It's fantastic, fantastic. JB Trophy Hunter 1975. Trophy 5000. It's a milestone, sir. Congratulations. Trophy 5000. And finally got his platinum in Resident Evil Code Veronica X. Well, look, that's like, I believe that's like old school Resident Evil, I think. So congratulations, sir. That is probably too difficult for me, but I tip my digital hat for your milestone as well. Gaz Davis 11. Oh, look, this is more in my line of games. Number 69, how appropriate. Super Destronaut DX on the Vita. Now, Gaz here, he's gone on to say, there was a stage I was thinking I didn't remember it being this tough on the PS4. I knew that you had to only play to level 12 on challenges, but I missed the trophy pop, so wasn't sure what I was on. Quit out on level 19. That's a lot of extra work, Gaz. I was having to kill 100 enemies in 40 seconds. Of course, Gaz is not used to playing these short, nasty sort of games. So, he was probably shocked that even after level 19 you got a plat. But, Gaz, you basically played half the game again, level 12, that's it. That's it with these games. Onyx, massive milestone here for Onyx. Number 800, Ghosts of Tsushima. And look, my respect grows for you, sir, because I know how long that game is now. It's monotonous at times with cleaning up that map. It's just continuous. But congratulations. And he's gone on here to say, honestly, I think it is the best way to end this gen with an exclusive that really showed the possibilities of the PS4. And look, the more I play, the more I would have to agree with you. I know it was a little harsher a week or two ago when it first came out, but I do agree with you. And if you love Assassins, it's going to scratch that itch. It definitely is. Rinichi, number 159, The Chronicles of Riddick, Assault on Dark Athena. Again, I apologize, sir. I know nothing of this game other than I'm sure it's a highly skilled game. Congratulations. Mr. Tam, number 86, Rhyme. Now, this is a beautiful game, but I've always heard mixed things about it. So let's see what he feels, listeners. This was a fun game. Nice little puzzler, great art style. I had to look up the last couple of collectibles because I missed them entirely. And his platinum shot here, it's just a beautiful, relaxing shot of the beach and water. It's just lovely. So look, I don't know, maybe I know that game was PS Plus at one stage. I know it's always on sale. I believe I even have a physical copy of that game from ages ago. So maybe one day. Redbeard Rick. Now, it's not often that I get stumped with a game that I've never heard of, but he has done it here today. Listeners, number 185, Demon's Tier Plus, the Vita Stack. great fun twin stick shooter roguelike, cross by with two lists. So I knew nothing about this game other than, you know, Rick has recently played it, so automatically it's of quality, I can assure you, listeners. But I looked up a guide. It's around 5 to 10 hours. I'm not sure the difficulty on it, but it seems progressive. So I think if you die, you go back to the beginning. I wasn't sure if you lose everything, like your money and your points, because it seems to work in sort of three tiers, if you like, or three worlds. But you know, if that isn't the case, if it's a progressive thing, then I might be quite interested in that. But it may be something to check out. New member for the group here, Dash VIP Dash, which, you know, I love the name. So you are a VIP, that is for sure. Number 765. Now, I believe it's Lego Ninjago. I don't think it's Shadows of Rodents. I think it was Lego Ninjago there. Congratulations, sir. EDJ3DG, number 48, Hitman Absolution HD. Well, that's a throwback, isn't it, that game? But congratulations, sir. Another big game and a big plat. It's good to see you're moving nicely through your backlog there. And to wrap us out today, we have Ed the Shed, number 117 and 118, Josiah the First Case HD. That's the EU and NA stack. Congratulations, sir. Quite an easy skippable VN as well. Not suggesting you did that, but you know, if you were inclined to, around the 15 to 20 minute mark. And then number 119 and 120, Nicole, EU and NA. So this is an interesting one as well. Again, skippable in like 15 minutes, I think, or something. But interesting VN where you can play in two elements. You can play in VN mode, or you can play in this sort of stat building mode, if you like, where you actually choose what you do throughout the day. I know that this game is priced substantially higher on the store for Radalika ports, so that is partly the reason. Yes, it can be a quick plat, but if you're going to engage in both systems, it's a full VN of around 15 hours. If you are going to use that method, I believe Knopf's guides have a full walkthrough, or if you're looking for a more skip walkthrough, I believe they are available. I think Dino Raw and Dex may have been involved in that, Dex guides as well. So there's something there for everybody. So listeners, that brings us to the end of another week. I hope you continue to smash the cap. I hope the trophies fly every which way and land on your own profile. Until next week, have fun, happy gaming. I'll speak to you soon. Push to Plat podcast are conceived, written, and edited by CJ Anderson in Adobe Audition. YouTube upload handled by repurpose.io. Music licensing by artist.io. Push to Plat would like to thank our Patreon producers Zador VP, Redbeard Rick, T-Bird, Olcero, and Ready to E-Beg. Without your support, this show would cease to exist. If you would like to say hi, jump into the Discord in the show notes or on Twitter at Push2Plat. If you're interested in supporting the show, then jump on Patreon, the Push2Plat Patreon, where you can find more information on how to support us and allow us to continue to bring wonderful guests and topics from around the world. Yeah.